My head is underwater.
You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's guest is the one and only Kate Nash. Her music has been a companion to so many people during times of immense joy and relentless darkness. And that's a testament to how she's always able to convey her heart with an honesty and a nuance that's just damn indescribable. For the last few years, she's gone through a creative metamorphosis, delving into the world of punk and ultimately proving that there's no reason why punk and pop can't coexist. But the chat you're about to hear isn't exactly about Kate's music, at least not explicitly. This episode is about the documentary about her life called Kate Nash Underestimate the Girl. Directed by Amy Goldstein, the documentary highlights the many highs and the depths of the lowest moments of Kate's career. It's an intimate, to be honest with you, it's as intimate as a documentary can be. And by the end of it, you truly find yourself wondering, how did one person endure all this? And that's what today's talk centers around. I caught up with Kate after being very fortunate to being able to see a screening of the film here in New York. And we chat over the phone about the experience on making the documentary, having to watch it with an audience, some of the issues of the music industry, and much more. This is the 405 Exchange with Kate Nash. Enjoy.
I'm a bad lieutenant. Call me crazy, I'm velvet. Ready told you I was made of bricks on cement. Come on, girl gang, got my back. Raining in LA, which is really nice. And it's kind of a good vibe in LA at the moment, just kind of cozy feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil the key moments and the arc of the documentary because I feel it's important for people, even fans, to go in knowing quite little. The docs, but I want to kind of touch on some things. The doc starts with you preparing to work on a song. And what I love is how immediately you're demystifying the music making process. Can you go into how it came about that the doc was going to start this way?
To be honest, it's really been quite a wild journey because we had no idea what we were making, to be honest. We had no, like, it wasn't a doc that was built out of me trying to promote something. It was just like these women had this interest in my life and career as an artist. And it was, I guess it was about an artist journey and how to like thrive in 2019 and how to keep surviving. I think when you go through these different scenarios that are difficult, but I think that I think that demystifying stuff and being really honest and raw and showing the process was a big part of the doc, because I think that was just kind of like part of the overall message, was to sort of show like what it's like, you know. Like, what is it actually like? What's the process like, the whole process?
I do get that. And I think that was something I gravitated towards, like, really swiftly with watching it. Like, I think within the first even 5 or even 10 minutes of watching it, it's pretty clear there's nothing to promote. And I would say that was my favorite thing, because for me, as someone who loves music and loves film and just loves storytelling, I felt like I was getting essentially that, like, here's a story, but it's someone's real life, which is very interesting.
Cool. And also, like, you know, writing songs, that's what we're all doing here. That's where it all comes from. It comes from a song, you know? I like that it starts with me just like recording in a room in my house, 'cause I'm like, that's what all this madness comes down to. There's all this other shit going on, but actually it just comes down to like, I want to write a song and this is kind of how it's done. And then everyone like connects to that. It all goes from there. It's like, this is the first spark. It's kind of simple, really.
It is pretty simple. And it's also wild, like you saying that, yeah, it kind of touches on something really special in that, because when I was going into it, I wasn't expecting it to cover as much ground as it does. It really does touch on almost like every facet of your career. And like, I think where the through line within all that is that regardless of whatever you've been through, regardless of wherever you've went,
geographically. At the end of the day, you've always just wanted to make music, and that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your life with the world. I mean, it really is an amazing thing.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I think that simplicity is really important for an artist to get back to when it gets crazy, because you can really lose sight of like why you're doing what you're doing, and there's a lot of other distractions. So I feel like it helps to come back to that notion, to just get in touch with that and kind of find the fun in it all again.
Yeah. Something I'm really curious to ask you about, director Amy Goldstein, she did such an incredible job on this, as well as her team. What was your relationship with Amy like prior to filming, and how did, like, you mentioned how, you know, this team of amazing women wanted to make a film centered around your life, but how did they talk you into making it a reality?
We didn't know each other before filming.
Oh, wow.
I just like met Amy through, I met Amy through a hairdresser that we had in common. She heard about my show at Coachella in 2014 and she was intrigued. We met like once or twice before filming. But I didn't know them other than like through this mutual link. And we definitely got to know each other through filming, because you spend a lot of time together, you know. And I guess just the years went by and all this stuff happened, and I started to believe more in the project, because I think it's important to tell true stories. So I guess it comes down to that.
Yeah. And I'm going to mention this probably within the intro, but I'd love to mention it here as well. One of the big standout things about the doc is it's shot very differently than the way most docs are. And that actually is my favorite thing. Along with you being the subject of the documentary, you also had a big hand in shooting it as well. I'm a music photographer myself, and I've toured with some acts. And with seeing how the doc went through, it really touched on my experiences where it's not possible to be everywhere and capture every moment. So to have you as an artist doing that, it really felt like I was experiencing things through your own eyes. Can you go into like what it was like making that happen? Because I think that's a really cool thing that you guys were able to accomplish.
They just gave me a camera and encouraged me. And I think at first I probably wasn't using it. I don't know. I can't remember how long it took me to get into it. But also I do have that, like, I grew up, like, my music got started on social media. So I've always had this, like, it's always been quite natural to share. I think more so now than ever, probably for everyone. It's like we're used to kind of looking into a camera. I don't know whether that's having a good effect on humanity in general or not. That's up for debate. But like I did have comfort with that. And I think during a lot of the turmoil, being able to do that gave it some kind of purpose, which I was desperately seeking purpose. So I felt like my entire purpose got ripped away from me. The ability to do what I do got taken away. And I felt very lost, because my career is based on like my identity. And so when my ability to like pursue my career or like succeed in my career or even like perform or record or all these things that like I've done naturally all of my adult life, when that's taken away, then it's like taken away a link to my identity. So I felt very lost and very purposeless and very like, what is the point in anything? Because if I can't do what I do, then I don't know who I am. And I think having the camera to hold onto, in a way, at least I was able to tell a story. I didn't know what it was for. I didn't know where it was going. I didn't know if we were ever going to finish, what any of it was going to look like. But telling the story helped for some reason. It was something to hold on to.
Yeah. And again, not to spoil anything for people listening, but, you know, around the middle of the documentary, you go back to the UK to visit your parents. And during the Q&A, you and Amy touch on how the future of the doc itself was uncertain when that happened. And it's kind of funny because the way, I mean, I could tell when Amy was talking about it, it surprised her that you found yourself filming yourself while you were there. And I love the footage that made it into the doc. I mean, I bring
Me
this,
too.
Yeah, it's a really special thing. I bring this next question up not just in regards to the purpose of filming while you're there, but also the after, because, you know, there's always a lot of editing that goes on to making a coherent story. Why was it important for you to show that side of your life, your parents?
I think when I went home, I realized, like, that this sense of stability is really I really lacked it. You know, I spent, like, the majority of my adult life from the age of probably 18, 17, touring. And so being still just never felt like home to me. And being forced to be still was very uncomfortable. When I'd moved to LA to kind of pursue my dreams and further my career, and then I was suddenly, like, you know, halted, then it was like, oh, this is very uncomfortable. I don't know how to function like this. It made me consider my future. It made me think, like, how am I going to have a real life, whatever that is, you know, like, what is a real life? What kind of life do I want in my future? What do I want? And I think it was the first time I was confronted with not, like figuring that I had to make changes. I had to do things if I wanted things to look different in the future. And I think when you're constantly on the move, you don't really have to consider that. You don't have time to, and you're just not thinking about that. But when you're stopped, you do think about it.
Yeah.
And at home, I just felt at home. I feel comfortable there. I feel, like, looked after. I feel safe. And I think it made me think about things, and it made me realize, like, I want that feeling even when I'm not home. And I didn't know how to get that at the time. I didn't know if that was ever possible.
I think that's something that's definitely a challenge that so many people can relate to, because it's kind of like that thing of, you know, you could always go back home, but to just function as a human, how do you bring home with you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you create your own home?
It's tough.
Yeah.
Honestly, it has to be said, though, your mom is one of the funniest human beings ever. I honestly have to say.
Oh, I know. I love my mom. She's the best.
Yeah.
She tells it how it is, you know?
She really does. I grew up a bit in London, and I'm Stratford, and I go to Ireland quite a bit.
Oh, cool.
Like, I have some close friends, and the scenes that your mom were in the documentary just reminded me of so many people that I know.
Yeah. She's so, it's like you realize how Irish you are sometimes when you, like, hear it in other people. You're like, oh my God, that's exactly like my family.
Yeah. Mike, so my girlfriend came with me to the screening, and afterwards she said something really interesting that I thought I'd bring up to you. Because she pointed out how it's one thing to have your life filmed, but it must be an entirely different thing to then watch the footage in a room of strangers. Well, friends and strangers.
Yeah.
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 And I think it's doubly interesting in your case because you're also a performer, but naturally there's a separation between performer and audience.
Yeah.
How has the instance been for you when you're in a room and seeing the audience view your life like that? What has that been like for you?
You know, I found it uncomfortable, but I find something therapeutic about watching it with people. I don't know what it is. It's just kind of like, it's like seeing it through. And it's part of this process. It's part of this release process. I like to kind of see people's reactions. There's something exciting about that and interesting for me and therapeutic in a way. It's like seeing what people have, like, you know, laughing or having, like, empathy for moments or being shocked by things. It's kind of like a comfort. It kind of makes me feel like I'm not completely mad or something, or, you know, I'm not completely alone, I guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I just like to share the experience with people. It's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there on your thought.
No. Yeah. Please. I could talk forever. It's good someone does need to sometimes.
Well, please do talk for them. I'm sure anyone who's listening, all they want to definitely hear you more than me, I'm sure. But that makes me wonder, like, when you're in a space like that, and just like the experience of doing that, I mean, is it possible for you to watch it as a spectator, even though you've experienced those things? Like, because I wonder if there's any separation even for you as that person.
Sorry, say that again.
Yeah, I meant, is it possible for you to watch it with an audience and to almost feel like you're part of the audience? Or do you almost feel like there's a separation for you being the person that's on screen?
Yeah, there's a bit of a separation. I mean, there's little... It's weird because there's certain moments where I'm like, I'm dying right now. Like, this is so cringe and embarrassing and humiliating. And like, I suddenly feel really aware of the room in those moments. I'm just like, oh, fuck. Like, this is the worst part. I almost want to scream out, like, guys, this is the worst part of the movie. Or, like, don't worry, I know how horrendous this is or something. Like, but I think, you know, then there's other moments when I just kind of get caught up in the emotion of it because I see things like, me and my dog just like lying together and I'm like, oh my God, like Stella just got me through so much of it. And like, it's just bizarre to watch yourself during one of the worst moments of your life and see where you've come to and see in those moments, like what got you through it. And also to just like accept yourself. It kind of like helps me see myself with kinder eyes because I'm not just like, I think it's so easy to look back on things and just cringe or feel like judgment. And I actually feel like I'm able to look at myself with really kind, with a lot of kindness because I think because of other people's emotional reactions to being so honest, you know?
There must be so much power in that. I totally get that because honestly, yeah. I feel like even when I think about it in the context of my own life, I think that's a difficult thing to do, looking at your past self and feeling a sense of kindness towards yourself.
Yeah, you have to do it, man. It's you know, it's too easy to just be like, oh, my younger self, like how annoying or stupid or blah, blah, blah. But I did this 10-year anniversary of Made of Bricks, my first album. And that was a big moment for me of going like, oh, wow, I'm singing these songs that I wrote when I was 16. And I'm like, respect for my 16-year-old self. And like, it's so cool to kind of go back to that version that was so... unimprinted upon, I guess, and not affected by some of the drama that life unravels. And you know, all you can do is the best that you can do at that moment. And to be able to accept that is a very beautiful thing. It's like forgiving yourself or something, because I think we're so used to judging ourselves so much that when you finally just be like, you know what, you just did the best you could. And like, you know, like my mom said that thing where you like look in the mirror and you're like, you know what, like how easy is it to just be really critical and stuff? And like actually, like I've made mistakes and that's okay, but like I'm proud of who I am. And I think you have to give yourself those moments of like respect and forgiveness and like love and like just being kind and knowing that you just have always been doing the best that you can.
Yeah, I massively agree with that. And you brought up, you know, right before you said that, you brought up the tour you did. I was actually at the Irving Plaza show. That was a really beautiful thing to see.
Oh, cool. Witness. Oh, yeah, that was awesome. I loved that show.
Yeah. I've been fortunate to see and photograph you live a couple times now. And one of my favorite moments, actually, it made it onto the doc. It was the Lollapalooza set you did back in 2014.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that was sick. That was fucking sick.
Thank you.
Yeah, like
that was so cool.
I feel like that was a really true moment for you.
Yeah, it did feel like it at the time. It felt like I'd been like swimming in this insane current for like 2 years, and then I got to Lollapalooza and it felt like the end, and I like got onto the beach and I was like, oh my God, I'm actually still standing. I can actually still, like, we didn't just all drown. Because at some points during that Girl Talk era, we just didn't know what was going to happen. And I think getting there was like, okay, we can do this.
Yeah, it was beautiful because like you really went for it. And I remember that day was so hot and the crowd didn't care. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was such a moment. It was such a moment.
Yeah. Talk to me a bit about your band, because I mentioned just now I've seen you live a few times and I'd love for you to highlight these amazing women that you get to play with.
Yeah. Oh my God, Linda Barato, who is my like lead guitarist. She's Italian, she's from Bologna, and she's an incredible, incredible like shredder. She's one like the best guitar player I think in the world, and she's a joyous, joyful like light up the room, like fill the room with energy, never being anything but herself, colorful, loud. Unaware, you know, just kind of like embraces her like enthusiasm for life. She just like makes you feel good, and we just have the best laughs together. Like, you know, we've been through thick and thin, and she's just like one of my, she's like my family, you know. So yeah, she's like, and totally grounding at the same time. Like, just totally, she's so loyal and there, and like ready to like go to Mordor with you. and then Emma Hughes. Who again, I have known for a long time, Emma, and who is also like my sister, like family. She is a bass player, amazing bassist. Like started a cool story. Emma started like playing the flute, and she just like couldn't connect to playing the flute. And then she found her dad's bass in the basement and was like, "What's this?" And started like jamming and grooving on the bass and was like, "Yeah." She's just a groove machine, and she's like this mad mix of like really being into Hello Kitty and calling people Petal and being this like lovely caretaking like motherly figure who's obsessed with cleaning and like organizing events and having like to be on time for stuff and everything to sort of be functional, and then also being like into metal music and like having, she's overcome like so much anxiety. She used to have stage fright when she was younger, and now she can like rock out like Lollapalooza, and she's just a badass. And she's developing her own like therapies to help like kids with different disabilities that music can be used as therapy for. So she's doing amazing work, studying right now. And then I have worked with multiple drummers, but like Alicia Warrington is in the documentary, and Steph Barker. Alicia Warrington we were thick as thieves. We were kind of, I feel like me and Alicia were in a past life together where we were just bandits or something. She taught me how to stay alive in America. She's just like hilarious. She's one of the funniest people I've ever met. She's completely mad, and you know, we understand each other. We've gone on many road trips. We've ended up in some ridiculous situations. And I feel like she's like, you know, I don't know. She calls through bullshit immediately. And she's like she's toured since she was like 15, and she's played with like fucking death metal bands. And like Kelly Osbourne, and like very like she's played from like this super pop to like super like death metal and everything in between, and she's a legend, and she's actually now killing it at WWE because she's a huge wrestling fan, and she now works at like NXT. Otherwise known as Alicia Taylor. Yeah, and she's a genius. She's a mad woman who I love. Don't mess with her. That's one thing. Don't mess with her. Don't, you know, eat an apple over her head or get any crumbs near her or sneeze without covering near her either. I would forewarn people about that. And then Steph Barker is a drummer from LA. She is like so cool, such a fun drummer to play with. And, has this music side project called Baby Bulldog, and has awesome curly hair. And yeah, we've known each other the shortest, but Steph jumped onto a tour kind of, I tweeted that I needed a new drummer, and Steph replied to, I just hadn't found luck in finding a new female drummer, and I tweeted about it a couple of years ago for this tour because I wanted to find the right person, and I feel like I didn't have them. And Steph replied to my tweet, and I was just looking at all these people, and I looked at her stuff, and I was like, this girl's fucking cool. She hits the drums, like she's such a meaty drummer. And I just loved her email and personality, and she's really fun. Yeah, those are the girls in my band, and they're all awesome.
You know what I love about getting to hear that just now, like hearing you talk about them, is that I get the sense that even though it's always been like Kate Nash, like front and center, I get the vibe that even when you were younger, maybe, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, and you know, it's conjecture or whatever, it feels like you've probably always wanted to be in a band. Like that's kind of the vibe I get when you talk about
it. To be honest, like, yeah, I totally think that, like, I think, although I'm glad it didn't end up that way, because I do think that, like, things evolve. And I sometimes hear stories of people in bands and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm on my own and I don't have to, like, go through all these divorces or, like, be stuck with people that I've grown apart from, you know? Because sometimes you work with people when you're younger and you're like, damn, so glad. Like, how could you could never have carried on forever with these kind of people, you know? So I do feel lucky in that. Although, yes, I wanted that and never found it, that, like, being a solo artist has its own, like, pluses. And that it took a while, but, like, I found my family and my band. Like, I mean, having a band is and really being, like, a unit is the coolest thing ever, because when you play, you're just, like, one solid thing and you all just understand it and get it. And, you, like, when you've done a good show and you've all been so in sync, you come off and you're all like, fuck yeah, that was just, like, ugh. Just went in and you're just like, ugh, you can't, like, ugh, can't really describe it, but it's just like, ugh, it's just sounds and feelings. And yeah, I think I did want to be in a band. I would always, like, go, all the, like, guys from school that were in bands, I would, like, go and hang out in their rooms and try and, like, play and do collaborations and stuff and try and sing on stuff they were doing. But I never found, like, people to play with until later. And then it took me a while to find the girls too. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's a, you know, for people listening who haven't seen you live yet, it's a absurdly fun show. Like great to see you live again.
That was my goal. To be honest, that was my goal. I remember having this moment where I was like, you know what I want is just people to have the most fun ever. I think I was, like, listening to Queen and I was like, Queen just make you feel epic. Like, every song is so uplifting and fun and, like, euphoric and joy. And Freddie must have had that purpose to be like, I'm going to just fucking, like, make every song euphoric. And I was like, I want to, and I just found, like, all his live shows to be so fun. Like, he was so cool. And I felt like after watching loads of Freddie, I mean, we grew up watching Queen. My parents loved Queen. And I just wanted that. I wanted to bring that to shows. I was like, I just want to, like, make shows the funnest thing ever, because people act so cool, or, like, these, like, when you watch bands and they don't really seem to care, or they're just, like, putting on an act. I'm like, I don't want to be that. I want to be me, and I want to just be really honest. I don't want to try and, like, be something else, and I just want people to relax and, like, have the go away being like, that was the best night ever, and feel like they can, like, take over the world, and just, like, they had a really good night out. I think that's, like, what I purposely want people to feel when they leave my shows.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the experience of being at your shows, it's nothing but smiling. So you're definitely hitting that right, in my opinion.
Good.
Yeah. Good. I just have a couple more questions for you. You know, a big thing I'm curious about is that over the course of the film, you go through the ringer of the music industry. And, you know, there's so much that could be said about what it's like to, you know, deal with all the bullshit. And we touched upon it earlier, how in the midst of everything, at the end of the day, all you want to do is make music. What I want to know from you, though, is, like, did it surprise you that even in the lowest points that, you know, of the hard stuff you were dealing with, that ultimately it was, like, the singular thing that you wanted to do? Because it's one thing to have that conveyed to us as viewers and fans, but for you as the person who's living it, I almost wonder if there's times where you're thinking, like, wow, I love music this much.
it's reassuring in a way. Like, well, I've spent my whole life doing this, so I guess I really am committed, and I obviously need this to breathe, so kind of reassuring to see how dedicated I am.
Before I let you go here, I was spending the day thinking about how I wanted to ask this, and it's kind of like a reverse of something I'm sure you're asked all the time, because I imagine you're constantly asked, what would you say to artists, creatives, particularly women who want to make a career with their art? And I think rather than asking that, you know, you're asked about all the time, I'd really rather ask, what do you feel women particularly do not have to do to make a career with their art? Like, what do you think are some of the things that should be avoided, or some of the misconceptions that a woman has to do to make her art into her life?
It's complicated. It's political. I feel like, it really comes down to, like, you don't have to do what other people tell you to do. You don't have to do what other people tell you to do. I feel like there's so much, like, women face in terms of, like, how I'm supposed to look, how I'm supposed to act, how I'm supposed to sound, how I'm supposed to do it. And, you know, fighting against that is really important. If it's going to make you unhappy, it's not worth it. And you can find your own way of doing things. So I think, like, yeah, don't listen to people that your gut is telling you are wrong. Because your gut is right.
I think there's power in that, in you saying that, because if you think about how most people live their lives, especially in, like, America and Britain particularly, I can't think of many instances where someone, especially a young woman, would be told that growing up, that it's okay.
Yeah, it's so true.
Yeah.
Even, like, we're growing up, like, we're taught differently from boys and, like, how to, like, touch ourselves and stuff. Like, this is going to sound weird, but when you're a little kid, if your girl, like, puts her hands down her pants, then she's told not to do that. And if a boy, like, moves his, like genitals around as a little boy, it's not only is it normal, but it's normal when a guy is an adult. Like, a grown man can, like, stand and, like, adjust his balls in public, and, like, a woman putting her hand down her trousers in public is seen as, like, crazy. And I just think that's really basic, like, teaching of how completely different our lives are and how completely different our experiences are. Because we're not allowed to do this same things, like, the world in terms of, like, the world's view. And and I think that, like, we can fight against that, because those walls can be, like, broken down, and we should be able to touch our genitals in public as well.
I would massively agree with that.
on an actual level and on a metaphorical level.
Before we wrap up here, I should mention to people listening, because I'm sure people who, like, either know of you or don't know of you are definitely curious about this documentary. And I remember from the Q&A you were mentioning, it was mentioned how it's going through the festival circuit and a secret distribution. So I would highly recommend people follow you, follow Amy Goldstein on Twitter, online as well, and just keep your ears
out. The film is at Kate Nash Film, and I'm at Kate Nash, and I've got a new song out as well. I've got Bad Lieutenant, which is my new single, so you can check that out. And the documentary, we're looking for distribution, so share, like, spread, like, information about the doc if you can, and request it at your local film festival, because that will help get it out there, hopefully.
Yeah, massively. And I should mention as well, the video to your new song, Bad Lieutenant, is really fucking cool.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm really into it as well. It, like, features a really awesome young woman called Tilly Lockie, who has bionic arms. And she's a huge inspiration, so it's worth checking out.
Yeah, that was a really nice surprise to get that notification. And, like, yeah, honestly, cheers for that one. You smashed it out of the park, as did Tilly.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. It's been massive getting to chat with you. I mean, we've kind of crossed paths a couple times over the years just in proxy of, like, festivals and that. So it's good to finally have a chat with you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. And, cool. You know, everyone just heard where they can track, keep in touch with you. So, thanks again.
Yeah. Honestly. Sweet. Thank you so much.